The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 5, text number 7, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on September 19th, 2009, in Tallinn, Estonia.
So, tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 5, text number 7. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Yoga yukto vishuddhatma. Vijatatma jatendriya. Sarvabhutatma bhutatma. Kurvan api na lipyate. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. Purport. One who was on the path of liberation by Krishna consciousness is very dear to every living being, and every living being is dear to him. This is due to his Krishna consciousness. Such a person cannot think of any living being as separate from Krishna, just as the leaves and branches of a tree are not separate from the tree. He knows very well that by pouring water on the root of the tree, the water will be distributed to all the leaves and branches. Or by supplying food to the stomach, the energy is automatically distributed throughout the body. Because one who works in Krishna consciousness is servant to all, he is very dear to everyone. And because everyone is satisfied by his work, he is pure in consciousness. Because he is pure in consciousness, his mind is completely controlled, and because his mind is completely controlled, his senses are also controlled. Because his mind is always fixed on Krishna, there is no chance of his being deviated from Krishna. Nor is there a chance that he will engage his senses in matters other than the service of Krishna. He does not like to hear anything except topics relating to Krishna. He does not like to eat anything which is not offered to Krishna, and he does not wish to go anywhere if Krishna is not involved. Therefore, his senses are controlled. A man of controlled senses cannot be offensive to anyone. One may ask, why then was Arjuna offensive in battle to others? Wasn't he in Krishna consciousness? Arjuna was only superficially offensive because, as has already been explained in the second chapter, all the assembled persons on the battlefield would continue to live individually, as the soul cannot be slain. So spiritually, no one was killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Only their dresses were changed by the order of Krishna, who was personally present. Therefore, Arjuna, while fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, was not really fighting at all. He was simply carrying out the orders of Krishna in full Krishna consciousness. Such a person is never entangled in the reactions of work. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamala
Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha. Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Raguna Tanvitam Sajiva Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha.
So why is such a pure soul dear to everyone? Think about it. If somebody is dear to you, why are they dear to you? Because you are dear to them. If somebody holds you dear, then you will hold them dear also by reciprocation. So, the devotee of the Lord, the pure soul, he sees everyone as Krishna's part and parcel. He sees everyone as his brother or his sister. Therefore, everyone is very dear to the pure-hearted devotee. And because he feels that love for all living beings, everyone loves him. That is described by Krishna here. And because he loves them, he tries to awaken their dormant Krishna consciousness. At the present moment, the entire world is suffering because people have forgotten Krishna. So the only permanently beneficial welfare work that one can do is to awaken people's Krishna consciousness. All these other welfare activities are compared to blowing on a boil. If you have a painful boil, it may feel good to blow on it. But does it cure the boil? No. So all of these attempts, material welfare activity, is simply blowing on the boil. It may give some temporary relief, but it does not solve the problem. The problem is we have a material body, and this material body is therefore subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadhi. These fourfold miseries, they are inescapable. As long as one remains identified with his or her material body. Therefore, the first point of instruction in Krishna consciousness is, I am not this body. As long as we identify, I am this body, we cannot advance in Krishna consciousness. There's a story given in this connection by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. That at one time in India there was a big wedding taking place. In the Indian villages, they will marry one boy from one village with a girl from another village. And it becomes a big festival for both of the villages, the wedding, you see. So the wedding was arranged, and the guests were coming from one village to the other village. But it was a big boat ride separating the two villages on the river. Many hours traveling on the water to get from one village to the other. So the villagers arrived at the boat landing just as the sun was setting at night. And the boatmen were going, they were just going to sleep on their boat. When the villagers arrived, they said, we're running late, we have to be there in the morning, by morning time for the wedding, so you have to row us overnight to that other village. So the boatman demanded some extra rupees. After all, they were giving up their sleep. And the villagers agreed. Yes, they agreed. All right, here's the extra rupees. You row us all night to get us to that village on time. So the villagers, they got on the boat and they peacefully took their rest. But when they woke up in the morning, they were very disturbed to see that the boat had not gone anywhere. They said, boatman, what is this? The boat, you've been rowing all night and we're still sitting here. What's happening? So the boatman looked, he said, oh my God, I forgot to pull the anchor in. So they were rowing all night, rowing, 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 hours and hours, rowing, 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 and they didn't go anywhere, you see. So do you know what that anchor is? That anchor is the false conception, I am this body. If you are thinking that you are a man, you will not advance in Krishna consciousness. If you are thinking you are a woman, you will not advance in Krishna consciousness. You have to detach yourself from this bodily conception. And understand this male covering, this male body or this female body is a covering only, it is a garment only, it is not me. Then you will advance. Long as you think, I'm a woman, therefore I need this, or I'm a man, therefore I need this. It's an anchor holding you back. Therefore, the first principle is, I am not this body. Aham Brahmasmi, I am spirit soul. So if we begin very solidly from this position, understanding that I'm not the body, I'm spirit soul, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. And we execute devotedly the regulative principles of devotional service. Then our boat will travel very nicely back to home, back to Godhead. We will take shelter of that wonderful boat of Krishna's lotus feet. There's a nice verse like that, describing the for one who takes shelter of the boat of the lotus feet of Krishna, who is the shelter of the causing manifestation, and who is the killer of that demon named Mura. For such a devotee who takes shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, this vast ocean of material existence becomes reduced down to the amount of water contained within the footprint of a calf. Such devotees are headed back to the Vaikuntha realm. They do not remain in that place where there is danger at every step. Now I will give you the Sanskrit. It's a beautiful poetry in Sanskrit. Samashrataye palapallavaplavam mahatpadam punyam jasho murari bhavam vadir vatsa parang parang padam 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 yad vipatam natesham. Very beautiful Sanskrit poetry. So just get yourself on that boat of Krishna's lotus feet. Krishna's lotus feet have appeared in the form of the Maha Mantra. So if you take shelter of the Maha Mantra, that is non-different from Krishna's lotus feet. So that Maha Mantra, it is a suitable boat for crossing the ocean of material existence. If you will jump into that boat, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, that boat will take you back to Krishna. So, now I can ask if there's any questions. Everyone's solidly situated on the boat now. No problems. The boat is not shaking. You see, if the boat's going like this, you can fall over into the ocean. You ever done that in a boat? You step in and it goes like this, and it's like this, you know, you can go whoosh, if you're not careful. That's all right. It's okay, I'm almost finished. So, you have to, this boat has to be steady. So everybody has a steady boat now, no problem? No, like wavering. Everything. Pakka. Yes?
I have a question. When this boat is going back to Godhead, then who is rowing?
Actually, I'll give you a little secret. Actually, the verse says, you don't have to, this boat does not require any rowing. Now just imagine, when I come from Helsinki to Tallinn, I take that Tallink, there's a super, the star or something, yeah, the Tallink star, yeah. So it takes 2 hours across the Gulf of Finland, you see. We get on the boat, and then we just wait. We watch, we slowly take off from the port, you know, slowly, slowly, and then you get out to the middle of the water, and then finally you see the land on this side. 2 hours it takes. And then you see. But just imagine if the Gulf of Finland shrank, you see. And you get on the boat in Helsinki, and all of a sudden, Tallinn comes right there, and it's, you know, the boat doesn't go anywhere because Tallinn has come all the way over. One end of the boat is Helsinki, the other end of the boat is Tallinn, you see. So the boat doesn't have to go anywhere, you see. It just becomes like a bridge. You just get on the boat and then walk through the boat and get off in Tallinn. So nobody has to row the boat. It doesn't require any rowing. It's a mystical boat. All you have to do is get on. Just by taking shelter of this boat of Krishna's lotus feet, you've already attained the spiritual world. So it's a pretty amazing boat. The spiritual master is the travel agent. He's selling tickets for the boat. And you know how much it costs? One price you have to pay for the tickets for this boat. Shraddha. Faith. You have to put your faith in Guru and Krishna. And by doing that, you get ticket to get on this boat. The Krishna boat, you see. This is not the star, Tallink star. This is the Krishna boat. Krishna's lotus feet boat. Yes. Pallava plava plavam. It's stated in the Sanskrit language, you see. That the boat of the lotus feet, the Krishna's lotus feet boat. Bhagavatam said. So forget the Tallink star. Get on this boat of Krishna's lotus feet. And then you will not go to hell, Sinki. You will go to Vaikuntha. I mean, who wants to go to hell, Sinki? How do you practically...
How do you detach from the belief that I am a woman?
Yeah. Well, you have to... Okay. First thing, you do not deny your woman's body. That's my body. You don't deny your woman's body. You just say, I have a woman's body, instead of I am a woman. That's the difference, you see. According to my karma, I have gotten a woman's body. Which means that in my previous life I was a man who was very attached to some woman and I meditated on her when I left my body.
Yeah. And I got my, and I was thinking of a woman when I left the body, so I got my reward, a woman's body. So, what to do with this woman's body? Engage it in Krishna service, that's all. Because no matter what body you may have, a male body or a female body, it really doesn't matter. Manghi pratavapashracha, ye pishu papayonaya, te pi striyavaishatatashu, thus te pi yanti paramgatim. Krishna says it doesn't matter whether you're a woman, whether you're Shudra, whether you're Vaishya, whatever you may be, everyone has an equal opportunity to come to me. He says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, text number 32. So Krishna is an equal opportunity employer. So the way to get free from I am a woman is to engage that female body in Krishna service. Twenty-four-seven. That's how you get free from the false conception of I'm the body. It's just like in Vrindavan, when you're doing Govardhan Parikrama, sometimes you get a thorn, especially if you're going barefoot around Govardhan, sometimes you may get a thorn in your foot. It happens to a lot of us. So what do you do if you left your tweezers back at the ashram? You know what tweezers are? Little things, tweezers? What if you left your tweezers back at the ashram? How will you get the thorn out? You take another thorn. You take another thorn and you catch this thorn and pull it out. You take another thorn and pull it out. So, I'm a woman. That is a thorn. Or I am a man. That is a thorn. So you take that male body or female body, whichever the case may be, which is a thorn, and you engage it in Krishna's service. So now you're using a thorn to remove the thorn. By engaging your female body or your male body in Krishna's service, now you're becoming free from the bodily conception. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma nasochati nakangshati samaksarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. One who is thus transcendentally situated becomes fully joyful and achieves the position of Brahman. Maybe easier if you look at them. In such a condition, he doesn't lament for anything. He never desires to have anything. He's equally disposed towards all living beings, and in such a state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So by engaging your female body in Krishna's service, then you come to Brahma-bhuta platform. And from Brahma-bhuta, pure bhakti. So now do that. Yes.
Before this lecture, you tell that he was like, when you joined Hare Krishna, he was like impersonalist.
Who? Oh, okay.
You are like Krishna chatting with you. And who smashed your impersonalist like philosophy? How they smashed the philosophy that you changed for personalist?
How did I become a personalist?
Yeah.
Well, it was. I can tell you, it was the benevolent kicks of Srimati Maya Devi. You see, at the time I was a songwriter and I was thinking I was going to become a big famous musician, you see. In fact, I performed one day with some of the biggest names of the era, the Jefferson Airplane and the Grateful Dead. I shared the stage with them at a concert. And it's predicted by the MC that I was going to become a very big name, you see. And one of the songs I sang was Impersonal Philosophy, and everybody, I was promoting impersonalism. And the crowd loved it. My song went like this: "Hey, I'm so unreal, I don't even exist at all." You can imagine how absurd it was. Here I am singing a song: "Hey, I'm so unreal, I really don't exist at all." And everyone, wow, they were cheering, they went wild, you know. They loved it, impersonal philosophy, you know. So, what happened was, you know, I was becoming more and more popular, but then things started to turn sour, you know, and people started to hate my music, you know. They'd approach me on the street and tell me how much they hated my music. So I got this whole idea of becoming a famous, big famous musician. I became very discouraged, you know. And because of all that discouragement, I became very introspective. And I was, I started actually praying to God to guide me, you see.
Asking what is introspective.
Huh?
Asking what is introspective means.
It meant looking within, yeah. So I knew that Jesus was a self-realized soul, a guru, a self-realized guru. And I was wondering, what was his secret? How did he realize that exalted state of consciousness? How can I realize it also? So I started studying the Bible, trying to figure out what was it that made Jesus a self-realized soul, you see. And one day I found it. And I was so excited. Christ says, "Father, not my will, but thy will be done." Father, not my will, but your will be done, you see. Christ was praying to God, "I don't want to do what I want to do. I want to do what you want me to do."
This is the idea, not my will, but your
So I realized I had found it. I had to do what God wanted me to do, you see. Now I was becoming a staunch personalist, you see. There was a distinction between me and God. He was the master and I was the servant. The only problem was I didn't know what God wanted me to do. And that's where Vishnu Jan Swami came in. I was praying to God to guide me, what He wanted me to do, and then Vishnu Jan Maharaj came to town. He filled in, He answered the prayer for me. Vishnu Jan Maharaj ki jai. Okay, next question.
I have one question. She asked how to practically be detached from the bodily consciousness, and the answer was that to engage in Krishna service. But I would like to know how it is possible practically to be engaged in Krishna service 24/7. And I also mentioned that for Matajis it will be difficult. At least in this temple, after they close the ashram here, after this
meeting. Yeah. The best thing is to take shelter of a spiritual master and just take specific instructions from him on exactly what you should do with your life. You know, get a whole formula given by him exactly how you should mold your life and do it exactly what he said. That's the easiest thing. Especially if you're living on the outside and you have no temple president guiding you.
Can you repeat your answer?
She's saying that if she's not living in the ashram and she's out there living with materialists, how does she stay 24 hours engaged? And I just said by taking shelter of a spiritual master and then, you know, taking his guidance in exactly what she should do with her life, then it becomes very easy to be 24 hours engaged. Does that answer your question? Okay. Any other questions? Yeah.
I am very detached to my husband. This is very dangerous. What should I do?
What did she say?
She said that she's very detached to her husband, and it is very dangerous. What should she do?
Actually, in one sense, it's good to be detached from your husband. In one sense, that's good. If we're too much attached to our husband, to our spouses, it's material. So actually, to be detached from your husband is a good thing, to a certain extent. Oh, attached. Let's just say detached. Oh. Okay. All right. If you're too much attached to your husband, that's all right. So what to do if you're too much attached to your husband? Then see your husband as the property of Krishna. Meant to be engaged in Krishna's service. Instead of seeing him as your property, this is my husband. You should say, this person is the property of Krishna. He is meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. And it's my duty as a wife to help him be engaged in Krishna's service. Now, if you are attached to saving him from birth and death by engaging him in Krishna's service, that's a spiritual attachment, and that attachment is good. If you're thinking, I must save this person is not yet initiated, he's not fixed in the principles as I am, it's my duty to try to save him, then that attachment is very good. That attachment is approved by your spiritual master. Attached to saving him from birth and death. But attached to sense gratification, no. Does that answer your question? Or if it hasn't, you can ask for them. Actually, it's a nice thing because that natural desire to be with your husband is actually good because it protects you from being with other men. One time some devotees in the U.S., they came to a festival. Some householder disciples of Prabhupada, they came to a festival. And Prabhupada said, "Where are your wives?" Actually, it is, "Where are your wives?" Prabhupada wanted to know why they hadn't brought their wives with them, you see. So that is one principle. It's sometimes stated by Prabhupada that actually the wife should also be there. I know when my godbrother Madhavisha, he had previously been a sannyasi. He had fallen down from sannyasa ashram and gotten married. And in the final days, he went and visited Prabhupada in Vrindavan. Prabhupada immediately said, "Where is your wife?" He didn't say, "Why did you fall from sannyas, you rascal?" He immediately said, "Where is your wife?" So actually that, for the husband and wife to be together, that is a Vedic principle. When Dhritarashtra went to perform austerities in the forest, Gandhari went to perform those austerities with him. Gandhari.
Yeah.
So the inclination to want to be with your husband, it is a protecting mechanism. If the husband is a devotee and one wants to be with one's devotee husband, that protects one from non-devotee men. So there is some value there, some good thing about them. That way you remain protected. The husband, he protects the wife from being exploited by unscrupulous men who are everywhere. So that desire to be with one husband is actually a very nice thing. In Vedic culture, it is not discouraged. It is protection for the wife. And the husband is also protected. If his wife is present, then he cannot go after other women. Men have a nature of wanting to enjoy many women. That is a man's nature, you see. But if the wife is there, she's like bodyguard. She can protect the husband from falling down with many women. It's actually stated in the Bhagavatam, the wife is like a fortress. She protects the husband from this fall down, you see. So Vedic marriage is actually very good to protect the man, both the boy and the girl, from falling down. Of course, if one can remain brahmachari, that is the highest position. But for those men who are not able to remain brahmachari, they can take household life and live peacefully. So does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Any other question? Yes.
One man approached Mataji one day and he said that, you know, actually, Bhagavad Gita is really dangerous book.
Oh yes, it is very dangerous. He's right.
And she asks, so why it is dangerous? And the man said, well, it's really dangerous for society and for you. So explain why it's dangerous. And he said, what when some insane man he reads this Bhagavad Gita? He will say that Krishna actually showed me that my relatives, they are demons. And I must kill them all. So what will you do with this person? No, that's what the question.
Now, Bhagavad Gita has to be understood from a bona fide spiritual master. That's what actually stated, to become qualified to study Vedic wisdom, one must become twice born. That is sometimes stated in the Vedic wisdom. It's like to study in the law school, you must have a bachelor's degree. Law school, where they train the lawyers, requires you have an undergraduate degree before you can enter the law school. So the actual qualification to study Bhagavad Gita is to become twice born. Become disciple of a bona fide spiritual master. That's the actual qualification to study the Bhagavad Gita. So you can explain to the gentleman, we have a very well-designed training program so that people can come and properly understand what is Bhagavad Gita. That we are teaching non-violence, actually, that you shouldn't even hurt a little ant.
Деле,
You can say to him, how you can say we are in favor of killing? We don't even want to harm a little ant. You can ask him, sir, do you eat meat? Then you are committing violence. We do not eat meat. So your claim is false. You have no one. You don't know what you're talking about. We are teaching how not to even hurt a little ant. Any other questions?
Yeah.
So it's like little commentary by the temple president. He said, when you met such a person, then you can tell him, well, show me this psychopath, you know, who were studying Bhagavad Gita and they killed their relatives.
They could say, but Arjun did. He was studying the Bhagavad Gita and he killed his relative. So, if they bring that example and say, but Arjuna was killing his relatives, so you... No, the point is not to kill one's relatives. That's not the point. The point is to obey the order of Krishna, to follow the instructions of God. That's the point. Arjuna, the example of Arjuna is someone who is already a warrior by occupation. The point of the Bhagavad Gita is to use your occupational duty in the service of Krishna. Bhagavad Gita says you should not perform someone else's duty. Shrayan svadharma vigana paradharmat svanushtitat svabhava niyatam karma kurvan napnoti kilbisham. Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 18, text number 47. It is better to perform one's own duty, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's duty and perform it perfectly. Duties performed according to one's prescribed nature are never affected by sinful reactions. So we are not telling that everyone should go out and start killing. No, that whatever your natural duty is, that you offer in Krishna's service. That's all. Because Arjuna's duty was he was a warrior by occupation. He was meant to engage in that occupation for the pleasure of God. That's all. Bhagavad Gita is not saying that everyone should become warrior. It is not saying. It says you should not become some artificial duty, which is not your duty. It's saying do not do them. Okay, next question. One more, okay.
Isn't the Bhagavad Gita also teaches that if the aggressors are there, then one has to defend oneself?
Yes.
That is also there. If an aggressor comes, you have the right to protect yourself. Huh?
That's not killing.
Killing?
So that is not called killing.
No, it's self-defense is not considered killing. It's not. When one kills in self-defense, one is not. Prosecuted by the law. One has a right to protect oneself from aggressive. I assume what you said was correct, but I can't understand what you're saying.
I said Bhagavad Gita is teaching, Krishna is teaching Arjuna to do the self-defense and not be, he was not aggressor, not a killer.
The Kshatriya, they are not aggressors actually. Real Kshatriya is not aggressive. He protects the citizens from the aggression of demoniac men. Such as Duryodhana and company.
Well, he killed these demons with the tears on his eyes. Arjuna killed this Duryodhana company members with the tears.
Yes, it's fratricidal war after all. He wasn't eager to kill them. But he did so out to please Krishna. But actually everyone got Sarupya liberation. They all got liberated. So it's actually a divine pastime. Be killed in the presence of Krishna is no ordinary being killed. Okay, well, I think it's a good stopping point here, 8 o'clock, and so now we'll get together tomorrow morning again for Srimad Bhagavatam class. We thank you all very much for your participation in this Krishna consciousness movement. Chanting and dancing your way back to home, back to Godhead. Raja Vidra Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.